This episode is brought to you by Cars.com. When you add your car to your garage on Cars.com, you'll unlock access to real-time insights into how much your car is worth. Plus, view its historical and projected value to decide when to sell. So when the time is right, you can secure an instant offer from a local dealership or sell it yourself on Cars.com. Start tracking your car's value with your garage on Cars.com. This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
Hello and welcome back to the Stadio Podcast. I'm Musa Kwanga.
I'm Ryan Hun.
Ryan, how are you doing?
I am pretty good. Thanks, Musa. How are you?
Good, thanks. Sounded a bit croaky there. Don't know why.
We both sound a bit croaky. You better sort that out for ahead of tonight.
Croak him on. I'll be fine. I'll be fine.
Do your cough, Croak Kwanga.
I'm good. I'm back in the room.
He's back in the room. Okay.
Croak Kwanga.
Hope everyone's staying safe, staying well. Are you apart from the croakiness, are you all right?
Yeah, I'm fine. I'm really enjoying my brief return to the UK.
Yeah.
On business.
Oh yeah, I'm seeing you tonight.
You are indeed.
Very excited. We'll be doing the Writers House live show at King's Place. Starts at 7:30. So if you're heading down, make sure you're in your seats.
Yes. And do come and say hello if you're about.
I'm going to be watching Roma Leverkusen while we're doing it, just on the sofa.
Of course you are.
Other than that, no Writers House actual show this week. Stadio back on Monday. So all the usual stuff next week. Go check Counterpress as well, because I imagine that Flo and the gang will be talking a lot about last night's pivotal game in the WSL title race, which we're going to shout out later on as well. Liverpool beating Chelsea 4-3 at Prenton Park. Wild game. But yeah, today we are going to talk all about Dortmund's win over PSG. So I reckon let's just get straight into it, yeah?
Let's do it.
Because actually I've just realised, you know why I'm so happy, Musa?
Why is that?
It's because Dortmund's win over PSG confirms 5 Champions League spots for the Bundesliga next season.
Incredible. That's incredible.
They tried to cook me. They tried to cook me.
That's huge for Dortmund.
Vindication for the Bundesliga.
Yes. That's huge for them, you know.
To be honest, they kind of need it because they're fifth at the moment. And
yeah, absolutely.
Losing
and their league form, yikes.
It's been patchy, yeah. Losing to Stuttgart and Leipzig in recent weeks has meant that the qualification for the Champions League by the league has been looking more and more, or less and less likely. So, it's great in a sense because it now means that they don't have to win the Champions League to qualify for next season's Champions League. But yeah. Kind of amazing that their own win over PSG was the thing that did it. So
cool. No, and it's also like they're all good value for you. Look at that top five: Leverkusen, Bayern, Stuttgart, RB Leipzig, and Dortmund. They've all got excellent goal difference, apart from Dortmund, and they've all just played football. Like, you know, the top four above them have all played Champions League worthy football. They've all been excellent in their own ways at different points this season, and just, you know, Dortmund in the Champions League. We keep going back to this, but in the group stages, they were so professional, so businesslike. The performance against Newcastle is still my favourite Dortmund performances of the Champions League, just because
at St James's,
the way they just came in and handled business.
Yeah. One of the few teams that could go to St James's Park on a Champions League night and just be like, this is calm, actually.
And cook. Yeah, no, truly. And that, if we look back at anything, if we look back at an origin story for Dortmund in this tournament, we can look to that and maybe say that was where we got an indication of what they could truly do, yeah. Which is why, funnily enough, and we'll get into this, it's why this is a disappointing victory.
I know. Well, the first time they've beaten PSG this season, because obviously they had them in the group as well, drew at home, lost away. But let's talk about this game. So Dortmund beating PSG 1-0 at the Westfalenstadion. I think they deserved it on the night.
They did, without question.
Although, if you look at the statistical breakdown, it looks quite balanced, PSG edging it on possession. But the difference in the two halves, I thought Dortmund started super well. And were clearly in that mode, Dortmund European night mode, knowing that they have to take advantage of that first leg. They had that chance, after 10 minutes, I think, where Sancho tries to play a ball to Julian Brandt down the right-hand side. He gets intercepted. He wins it back straight away.
Yes.
Plays in Brandt. Brandt cuts down. He cuts it back to Sabitzer.
Yes.
And Donnarumma makes the save, but you're thinking, wow, okay, Dortmund are gonna get in here.
They are.
And they continued to get in that first half. I think Sancho he completed 7 take-ons in the first
11 dribbles in the first half,
which is more than what he completed in any game for Manchester United.
It's unreal. That statistic says more about Manchester United than it does about Sancho. And I get a bit defensive about this because, yes, I'm a Manchester United fan, but I'm a football fan first. I always say this. And the frustration I have, the analysis of Sancho in Manchester, a lot of it was incredibly lazy.
Yeah.
It was incredibly lazy. You bring an elite footballer there with no plan. Any footballer...
We're going there straight away. I love this.
Yes,
we're
going there. I'm angry. And also, look, we're on the clock. So I'm angry about this because there's even conversations, can you do it on a big stage? He did it in a Champions League semi-final, first leg. There is not a bigger stage than that apart from the damn final, okay? So let's stop the narrative of Sancho can't do it, blah, blah, blah. He can. He is not getting the right infrastructure. The man was bought without a plan, and we've seen it. You buy a player without a plan, no matter how good the player is, the player will fail. The player will fail. There's a reason why Zinedine Zidane was chasing Pogba, because he had a plan for him. The frustration I have, the Manchester United, what's that thing they said, jokes in the dark night, I'm like a dog chasing cars. I wouldn't know what to do when I caught one. Well, Manchester United, with a dog chasing the Sancho car, they caught him and they had not a clue what to do with him. And time and again, they're just throwing talent into the combine harvester, and it frustrates me, and there's probably a stronger word for that, but I won't use it because it's only a football podcast.
My face throughout all of that was like watching one of those Kendrick reaction videos.
Sorry.
I was just like, oh. Whoa, Musa's going off.
I don't know where that came from.
Seriously though, this is like, this is classic. We see this all the time with the Premier League. This is classic, go and do it in a Farmers League. You turned up for Man United, you couldn't hack it kind of thing. Now, we're not going to talk about the whole big picture stuff because I feel like we've done this a million times and I don't want to do that every time we talk about a Jadon Sancho good performance, because it's worth pointing out that he has slowly improved this season. I think he assisted on his debut when he went back, or his second debut, if you like. But he hasn't been lights out this season.
No.
But he's been playing under a coach who understands him. He's been playing in an environment that he's comfortable in, which, yeah, some people who think that there is this big Premier League superiority, right?
Mm.
Yeah, it's the richest league in the world. That doesn't necessarily make it the best. You look around the European spots this season, for the amount of money that's there, like Manchester United aren't in the Champions League semi-final. Jadon Sancho is. And he also, was unbelievable.
He bossed it. And actually, I want to talk about the coaching from Edin Terzic in relation to Sancho's development, because I've said this a couple of times to you. He's like on a crash course in terms of his recovery of his form. And what Terzic has done, he's just sent him out there. And you look at what I love about the Dortmund formation is, because you've got multiple playmakers there, you don't have to have Sancho at full steam for Dortmund to be doing reasonably well in this tournament. So he's sent Sancho out with the brief of just play yourself back into form. And what is really exciting about this, they talk about in basketball, talk about separation, when your dribbling is good enough to get you clear of your opponent to get a good shot off or a good assist off. And what we've seen with Sancho, week in, week out, we saw with his brilliant goal against RB Leipzig, we've seen gradually escalating his form and him getting more and more separation, because when Sancho first came back, it was like he was like a drop of a shoulder away from beating a man and just getting clear.
Mm.
And something clicked in the course of this game. And I want to just draw a kind of analogy between the first half and second half. The first half, he was like an NFL running back. He was making gains, but they were like 2-3 yards at a time. In the second half, maybe a little bit in the first half too, but in the second half, consistently, you saw it click. And all of a sudden, the space was in front of him and the delivery of the final ball. There were two passes Sancho played in the second half. We're jumping ahead slightly, which should have been converted. I mean, one was a great tackle from Marquinhos on Brandt, but the prior one against Fulkrug, you really look at that and think...
Just a Sancho, slightly tricky height, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. But you watched, and this is not to knock Fulkrug because we'll get into that, but the Sancho that evolved in this game before our eyes, I've said time and again that I wish he'd gone straight to Real Madrid as the right wing. And I still firmly believe that actually there's a parallel universe in which he goes, and I think actually, weird enough now, still not a bad look for them. And actually, weirdly enough, it's the perfect context because he goes in now under the fanfare of an Mbappe arrival. And we've seen how Madrid managed the squad. And I think Sancho, funnily enough, at this stage, I think he's happy with a rotation role in a squad like that.
Hey, you never know when they get Haaland as well. We're going to be saying that we're going to be seeing the Real Madrid English Twitter account saying Haaland goal, Sancho assist.
Sancho to Real Madrid. Do you know what? I'm saying it again.
God.
Speak it into existence. Should we actually talk about the football? Talk about the game itself?
No, this is way more fun. What are you talking about? No, I'm kidding. Let's talk about the goal.
Yes.
Niklas Füllkrug is an interesting player.
Mm.
I remember us talking after the Bayern win in Dortmund early on this season about how, you know, you have someone like Harry Kane on one side and then you have Niklas Füllkrug on the other, who isn't, you know, he's not Harry Kane, but like,
yeah, I mean, who is, but still, yeah.
The thing that I've been really impressed with Füllkrug this season is he's now basically he is the first choice number nine at Dortmund. There isn't really an argument about it. And
no.
He's actually really grown into the role. I've been really impressed with him since the turn of the year. And, you know, like we were talking about Sancho to Manchester United before, I think when you make a move like that, you kind of get seen in a different light.
Yes.
But I think last night proved he can do it there, man. I mean, because that touch and that finish.
Can I give a compliment that I thought immediately when I saw that goal? Messi against Nigeria.
Oh, wow. Okay.
The first touch on the run, I mean, it's the Messi touch against Nigeria is still my, he did it off the ground. But when I saw, I thought that in terms of the quality and the finish, it was absolutely elite. It was genuinely like if Harry Kane had done that or whatever, you would have been, okay, that's a finish befitting the best number nines in the world.
Mm.
And that is why I think the later misses were frustrating, because he scored by far the hardest chance. It was almost like an Alvaro Morata thing where, you know, like there's those players who you're waiting for them to catch fire.
Mm.
And there's a bracket of players. It's like, let's say Dominic Calvert-Lewin, Alvaro Morata, and obviously Füllkrug, where they show you in patches what their highest level is. I mean, that first touch, if you consider how loud the stadium was, you consider the pressure at that point in the game, the intensity of the match, the closeness of the match. Like, Dortmund started really well, but those spaces were very tight in the first half. There wasn't much midfield, in terms of midfield, and PSG already asserted themselves. To stride onto that ball with that touch, that confidence, that finish, he looked like a man in hat-trick form, actually, at that point. And we'll get later to why he wasn't, but...
That very sweet kind of just stayed at the same trajectory all the way into the corner. And with his left foot as well, a really, really good goal. And the thing I think he deserves the most credit for, though, is timing that run, because that run is so well timed. And he looked, I was convinced he was offside in real time.
Yes.
Because it just looked like, but it was actually the PSG defenders just stepping out at the wrong time.
Such a confident piece of movement.
And you know what? I'm really pleased that he wasn't offside, because I think that was such a good goal and it came at such a good time that I think if he'd been ruled offside, that would have been such a blow.
It felt like the kind of goal that gets stolen, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It felt like the kind of goal that, like, we're not... You know what it is?
Spiritually onside goals that get given offside.
It felt like, no, you can't have good things and this is one more good thing you can't have.
Yeah.
So look, I'm really glad that he got that moment to showcase his talent. They go into halftime at 1-0. And there's this gap. So it's funny. There's these pivotal periods in both semi-final first legs.
So just let me just jump in. PSG don't have a shot on target in the first half, by the way.
Wild, but that speaks to the closeness of the midfield battle. And even though they're being outmatched in terms of possession, which you always thought would happen, given you're basically having like two at the base of midfield against the three that is very much in a line. This is not criticism of Terzic, it's more like the Ruiz, Zaire Emery, Vitinha is almost like a block three at times in terms of how it's coordinated. You are often, that's often a spare man for them. It's just the way they are set up. Even with Brandt dropping deep, it's still slightly outnumbered. That's not a knock on Dortmund. You're expecting to concede possession to PSG. We saw that against Barca too. Barca had the same problem. But the spaces were so tight and Dortmund closed the gaps well. Hummels was excellent. And also, we haven't mentioned Kylian Mbappe yet.
No, because he was very quiet in the first half, I thought.
He was because they compressed the space. Yeah. Like, whenever...
Came alive a bit in the second half.
You know that thing about how in an oxygen needs that fire to ignite. They just kept snuffing out the spark. You could just see Mbappe drifting into space all across the front line. You know, this whole thing about... And can I say this as well? There's a thing that wide forwards have where they're like, oh, we can only play on the left. Or like Sancho at one point at United, it was like... You know,
he wasn't on the left, right?
No, actually, like, look, Sancho roamed in this game looking for space. Look how effective that was. And to Mbappe's credit, Mbappe did actually roam a lot in this first half. Mm. He really looked and took up different spaces. But whenever he wanted to give the give and go, like, the coaching was so good and the positional sense was so good, they just anticipated everything.
Mm.
They were like, we'll start out wide left. Let's try and cut him off. We'll go inside. Let's close the angles. And he just didn't have the room.
No. And then, the one that he hit the post, that little passage of play, which was kind of wild for Dortmund that they escaped.
Like the Real Sociedad goal, had that written all over
it,
didn't it?
I mean, that it just doesn't look on, right? He has a tiny, tiny space,
curls it into
the right, like, well, it looks like he's going in the right-hand corner, pings off the post, bounces out back behind Kobel, cuts back in, Hakimi hits another one, hits the left-hand post, like the other post.
It was Hakimi, was it? Hakimi, yeah. Right. He didn't have the best game, Hakimi, actually. He was, or maybe that's because Adeyemi gave him a good workout, actually.
I thought Adeyemi was really good, actually, in this game overall. Worked really hard defensively. Not something that he's, like, mega famed for, but...
He's been a key part in Sancho's form recovering because...
I think so, yeah.
He's held down that flank so well.
Yeah.
He's allowed Sancho to play himself back into form because he's been so reliable.
Yeah.
And also, let's not forget, shout out to Adeyemi because... He got injured at a key point of Dortmund's campaign last time.
Yeah.
And they looked brilliant before that injury. Really, really good. And there's a parallel universe in which he doesn't get injured and they do something quite interesting in those late stages. But yeah, he was excellent. And he forced Hakimi into a couple of errors, pinned him back and made him look quite muted, I thought. I was really impressed by that.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Yeah, a few other key performers, I thought. Fabian Ruiz had a good game, not a great game. He missed that chance, the header where he cuts in. That's an unbelievable pass, by the way. It felt like there were two of those that PSG had.
Yes.
And on the first one where Fabian Ruiz kind of, the ball bounces and Fabian Ruiz ducks to try and head it. It's almost like Nico Schlotterbeck goes to clear it and then just decides, actually, no, I'm good.
Like, the second one was worse because it's like, by the time you get there, you should be scoring it.
Mm.
Like, once you're in space for that, the second one, I think, because everything was more favourable, the flight of the ball, the fact they didn't bounce, the angle of Ruiz's run, and the misses. I mean, what was it? Five big missed chances for Dortmund and four for PSG, it turned out. Yeah. And normally it's funny with the stats stuff. They say big chances, you're like, oh, like, and you see this, you're like, no, they weren't. It was huge. These were huge. What they call them in Germany, Riesenchance.
Yeah. We talked about Adeyemi. I think Kim Mattsson again played very well.
Yeah.
Julian Brandt.
Oh my goodness.
Is Julian Brandt having like a low-key poet great season?
You know what he's doing? He's doing an Iličić. You know, like the elder grandmaster who just floats here and there, who was just like decisive, stitching it all together. That's very much what I feel like when I watch him. Or like a Prozanetsky. I've mentioned Prozanetsky maybe before in connection with him. Just floating here and there, finding spaces, prompting. I mean, I reckon like if there's like a secret, you know, Pep, I'm sure Pep's got like a burner account where he just praises his favorite players and just retweets them, their highlights. Definitely Brandt is on that shortlist in terms of a player who is just aesthetically gorgeous to watch, but also in terms of his effect and his impact. And I love the way that we talk about Kroos taking control of a game. Brandt does it in a different way higher at the pitch. And to Kroos's credit, Kroos is quite humble. He said, I can't do what this player's doing, the 10 role anymore.
Mm.
What is so impressive about Brandt is the way that he just gets in the thick of all the action. Almost got the decisive second for Dortmund. It was only a really good interception of Armi Cunhos. The nutmeg, oh my God. That moment when Sancho plays the nutmeg pass into the box, like plays the nutmeg, having seen it, that's the angle, and Brandt goes through.
Should have hit it first time.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah, there's that. But I hesitate to criticise someone who was so good yesterday.
Yeah, I know, but that was literally the only thing where I think he should have hit it first time, because we saw that quite a lot, that pass by Sancho, and it would be Haaland hitting it first time. You can imagine Sancho should be like, oh, Erling used to hit those first time.
Yeah, yes.
But no, I think he was great, man. I mean, I just really enjoy watching Julian Brandt. Loved him at Leverkusen and was really pleased when he went to Dortmund. And yeah, I mean, there've been ups and downs, for sure.
Yes.
And I think he's one of those players who maybe we thought would be more of a world beater, if that makes sense. But right. I think he's slowly matured into this role of being like, okay, listen, I'm never going to be like the biggest superstar, but I can still really help a side.
And
but
also, like, honest, some of those players,
he could be at any, pretty much any top club, I think. He would have a
he's
role.
He's a
supercomputer.
Yeah, he's like
you're talking about Real Madrid
like
earlier,
Odegaard.
And I know this sounds like really weird, but like you can totally imagine him coming on for Real Madrid in the second half against Bayern in the second leg. It just wouldn't be weird if Julian Brandt was like a someone who came off the bench for Real Madrid.
Oh, it's total makes total
sense. Do you know
what
sense. I mean? Actually, yeah, to be honest, yeah. I think he kind of was slot in there as well.
Look, we've joked about this for years about how Real Madrid have finally fixed themselves, that actually players like Odegaard and Brandt would thrive there.
Yeah.
They finally sorted it out.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Brandt would be brilliant at any one of those clubs. He graced them.
I'd
yeah.
have him at Arsenal in a heartbeat.
But dude, of course.
Like, just 100%.
In that system. Oh my yeah. God, stop. Jesus.
Because again, he's a big dude as well, right? So he's he's physical, he's technical.
Can you imagine?
Seems like a good guy.
It'd be like
the only thing is he's 28.
They're different players, but in terms of a chance creation machine in that system, it would be like a De Bruyne type level.
Yeah, I mean, I
in
think
terms
he's
of just in
a,
terms of that system,
I yeah. think that's not a bad comparison. I think they're obviously, you know, De Bruyne is De Bruyne, right? But
yeah, of course, yeah.
But in terms of, you know,
seeing the gaps,
low key, quite physical as well,
right?
So, but yeah, I thought he was great, man. Let's look at the negatives. Not yes. negatives, but concerns for Dortmund, let's say.
Yeah.
I mean, when PSG could have had a few, we know this. They could have had a couple. They had that passage where they hit the post twice.
The Dembele miss as well.
The Dembele miss was big.
Yikes.
Kind of feels like, yeah, we've seen him do that a few times, huh?
He's weird though, because Dembele's a strange one. He scores huge goals.
Yeah.
Like in the title run, was it, I guess, at Leti, like away. He scores huge goals. Like, we've seen it for Barca and PSG. But I think he is a good example of someone who is absolutely a big game player and also misses big chances in big matches. And it's such a strange divergence, actually. It's rare that you get a player that does both, but he's certainly one of them. But yeah, that big miss. So we've talked about the PSG. Those are the negatives. I think for Dortmund, the concern is this, right? What, 43% possession at home. PSG will have the lion's share of the ball in Paris. They will generate chances. And I don't know, if you look how the crowd were incredible in Dortmund, I'm just concerned for Dortmund's chance creation away from home and their ability to punch through, because PSG gave them a really good look last night, and Mbappe in Paris is it's not a welcoming proposition. It's not a welcome proposition. And PSG, I think, will absolutely swarm them. This feels a bit like, you know what, when Lazio went 1-0 up against Bayern in the first leg at home, and you had that kind of confidence that Bayern would like turn it around in the second leg. Mm. And they did so quite comfortably. I don't want that to be the reality for Dortmund, because I believe they've done too well in this tournament to get a fate like that. But I am concerned that PSG in Paris is a very different proposition from what we saw last night.
Yeah, I think they could have. I mean, we were texting, weren't we, when I was saying I'm not even sure if two would be comfortable.
I think that's right.
Because it's just, I mean, it kind of reminds me, I know it was different circumstances, but remember when they beat them 2-1 at the Westfalen in 2020 and then went to Paris and just kind of didn't really, I mean, it was a weird game that anyway, because I think it was the first game that they played without crowds, because it was when the pandemic hit. So they played the first leg in a full crowd. That was the Super Tour go.
Yes.
And then they go to Paris. I think they lost 2-0. And that was when they were all mocking Haaland's celebration afterwards.
Yeah, celebration, yeah. Yeah.
But they just kind of didn't really look like they were going to ever win that game. And it was completely different to the first leg. And I'm a little bit worried that, you know, they obviously lost in Paris earlier on the season. I'm a little bit worried about that outcome.
Yeah. I see that.
Because we have seen that there were moments last night where PSG just ramped up the intensity a little bit, and it was a bit like, whoa, okay, they could really like pop a couple of goals in here. And I think it just depends if Dortmund, I mean, the thing about Dortmund is that if you look at that front three of Adeyemi, Füllkrug and Sancho, they can hit people on the break, right?
They can.
So I just think so much depends on that defensive stability, and I wonder whether Terzic might make a decision or two in terms of like packing that defensive line out a bit.
Interesting.
Does he play Zula at right back instead of Ryerson, even though I thought Ryerson was good? But in that sense, do you play that, because Zula can kind of essentially act as like a centre-back, right-back?
I'd prefer that.
I wonder what that looks like, you know, whether they can...
You know, it's so funny, because I was thinking what adjustments Tuchel was going to make for the second leg.
Mm.
And I wonder, I think Terzic has more adjustments to make than Tuchel in that sense. I like that idea of Zula. I think also there's a role for Sabitzer to just raise that level a little, because you look how Sabitzer has been so strong in the league, in Champions League, like in the second leg of the last round.
Mm.
I felt there was a level last night, you could even see the teammates talking to him, where there's another gear you can raise. And I think, look, they have the tools to win in Paris.
They absolutely do, yeah.
The slight regret I have for them is they're going to have to do it. They're doing it the Dortmund way. They're doing it the hard way. They're going to have to go for like historic win in Paris vibes. They're going to have to really summon something, and they could have just made it a bit easier for themselves. You know, the chances specifically, just to mention them, there was the Füllkrug one where Sancho cuts it back. He puts it over the bar, the right flank. The header that he puts over, and then potentially the penalty shout. I think I first saw this, I thought he'd get unbalanced on the way up by Mendes. Rewatching it, I'm not so sure. I feel like he jumped early and was leaning back to head it.
I think it's a penalty. The push comes at such a time where it just throws Füllkrug off. You can tell his body shape.
Yeah.
If this had been given, it wouldn't have been overturned. It's the, I think that's a kind of threshold.
Yes.
It's a threshold issue, Musa.
I don't want to critique the referee too much, because actually...
I actually thought Antetokounmpo had quite a good game.
He generally doesn't. I think more broadly, they had so many big chances in that 50-minute period that the penalty shouldn't have mattered. They can't point to that and be like, oh, this... No, they really...
Well, yes and no, though, because I think I don't think it's a big enough howler to be like, okay, oh my God, you know, put it this way, Dortmund aren't going to be putting out a statement.
Right, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, you know, penalty to make it 2-0 at that point in the tie, that's big. But it's not, it wasn't a big enough,
right?
You know, I think it's a penalty, but I'm not, you know, once it's not given, it's not given.
Also, I'm not a Dortmund fan. Yeah, I can be zen about it.
Füllkrug's not been cleaned out like one-on-one with the goalkeeper. It's not like anything like that. You know what I mean? He might miss the header. Who knows? So, but overall, big win for Dortmund.
Mm.
Lovely to see everyone celebrating that afterwards as well, because I just feel like it's been a very up and down season in the league, and this Champions League run has really been the highlight for them.
Mm.
And who knows if they get the job done in Paris. I would love to see them do it. I know that's, you know, sorry for being a bit biased, but at this stage of the tournament, you know, I feel like they are by far the quote unquote lowest ranked team in it. They shouldn't be there. Can't wait for them to get to the final, lose it, and then everyone talk about them bottling it, even though they shouldn't be there.
Yeah, right, exactly. Totally. It was like when everyone like slagged off Leverkusen for not getting the job done in 2002, and I'm like, have you seen who they're competing against? Have you seen who they're...
Did you see Zidane's volley?
Yeah, did you see that? Did you see the Madrid lineup? And the only that saved him in that final was Casillas.
Yeah.
I remember I was watching it. I was obsessed with it. Like, yeah, anyway.
It's worth remembering, this is very much the fifth best team in Germany this season, and they are right. The fifth best team in the Bundesliga this season. They are not like right. Second. They are fifth.
Right.
And like we mentioned at the top, they needed this fifth Champions League spot because it was looking like unless they won the thing, they weren't going to get in the Champions League next season, which would have been really bad news for them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, not bad for a fucking Farmers League.
Not bad at all.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 9-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at IKEA-USA.com today.
All right, just quickly before we go, shout out. We're not going to go too deep on it because we're going to leave it for Flo and the gang on Count and Press. But Chelsea's WSL title challenge, Emma Hayes seemed to have conceded it, which is strange because, like, Man City, right, like, I don't know. Maybe this, hang on, do you know what, Musa? Maybe this is mind games because Chelsea lost to Liverpool 4-3, four goals from corners out of the seven, maybe five. 6 points behind Man City now. Game in hand, they play Bristol City on the weekend, who are down, and Manchester City play Arsenal. But Emma Hayes kind of, she did this post-match interview with Aggie Bieber-Jones, who was great, by the way, scored an angry goal. Mm. Did you see it? It was really weird. She did that whole post-match interview with her arm around Aggie Bieber-Jones and said that that was the title done, but then it then didn't really talk about it.
I don't think these are mind games, actually. I'll tell you why. Because mind games, there's a discernible strategy. You're saying that to get a reaction out of X, Y, Z. I think this is just frustration. All of it. Like, consider this. On the morning of the 31st of March, Emma Hayes was on for a quadruple. Mm. Tough to achieve. A quadruple. That was the morning of the Conti Cup final. Still in the FA Cup, still in the Champions League, still in good position in the league. And just a month later, all of that has dissolved, evaporated. That's why I don't think these are mind games. This is genuine loss after loss after loss. If you look at the nature of the defeats, the disappointment of the defeats, this is cumulative. Losing to, I think it's fair to say, a loathed rival in Jonas Eidevall. I'm not sure what it is about that man that sets people off so much, but my goodness, that is genuine loathing. And it's disappointing to see that because they're two coaches I respect so much. And I just feel like, I don't know, maybe, do you know what it is? Maybe we've got a bit spoiled in recent seasons with elite coaches actually just liking each other and bear hugging each other before and after games and chatting well about each other. But that is a genuine enmity that's strange. The fact that she returns to it time and again is really
because they felt like they had that like mutual like.
This is the thing. Yeah. So this is why I don't think it's mind games. I just think the context of her recent statements, it feels like it's just a frustration, like all the other things. And I don't think her public pronouncements, to be honest, are particularly. The last time the mind games really worked was the cat thing when she celebrated against Jonas Eidevall. Like, Whereas this is, you know, this is, I think, the frustration at things falling apart, the injuries, the key players. I just think it's that, Ryan. I think it's that. And, it's sad for them because we've seen like some vintage Lauren James in this stretch. We've seen some really great patches of performance. We've seen Chelsea work out problems. You know, the defeat of Barcelona in the first leg in the Champions League was as strong an Emma Hayes performance in terms of coaching as we've seen in her time there. And then what happens, like, in 4 weeks, you're like, I'm not going to leave with anything. So to me, it felt like genuine frustration. If you even look at the kind of the fact they couldn't even close out a draw in this game. I mean, but Liverpool, to be fair to them,
they were good, man. They kept pushing.
They've had that energy.
Very brave as well. I mean, taking the lead, you know, going 1-0 down.
Yeah.
2-0 up in the space of 15 second half minutes. So like 51 goals, 51 minutes, 66 minutes. They go 2-1 up. And then they kind of look like they might do it. Chelsea score, Chelsea equalise in the 80th minute. They go at the other end, Liverpool, and score again. And then 2 minutes later, Chelsea score and equalise. And then in the second minute stoppage time at the end, Gemma Bonner gets her second and what ultimately turned out to be the winner. It's just like to keep responding like that against Chelsea. And it's really interesting so that bold. Actually on Gemma Bonner's second, even though I think there were 8 minutes of stoppage time, maybe nine to play, it took Chelsea looked done actually when that one went in. There was and it took them a couple of seconds to register that there was still time left before they grabbed the ball. And it looked like that one actually we're done here. Like,
I just think those disappointments, don't underestimate FA Cup, Champions League and this all in just a few, and Conte is a separate animal, I think, because it exists in a separate space. But certainly these last three, dude, these are huge psychological blows. It's just their inability to separate themselves from the pack. That's the thing that's the damning indictment. And again, look, to Chelsea fans, look, caveat injuries, absolutely. And also, this is a season that just promised so much more.
I agree. But the league isn't over. And we'll see. It could all change after the weekend. So we'll keep an eye on that. Just very quickly before we go, some breaking news. Ralf Rangnick has turned down Bayern. He's going to stay as the Austrian national team coach. So,
I don't know, I'm laughing.
That's Nagelsmann, Alonso, and now Rangnick. Took all weight in there like the John Travolta gif.
He curved it. He curved that job. Like, and I respect someone that understands, they know they've got a good thing. Where they are, I really respect that. Sometimes you got to stay home.
Oh, I'd love to. That's one of those I'd really love to, but I've kind of already made plans.
Sometimes you have to stay in Kansas. You know, sometimes you have to.
Oh dear, you should write. I think you'd be good at it.
I'll try. Tinkle a bit.
Anyway, all right, let's get out of here. I'm going to see you later. So let's get this podcast up as quick as we can. And then I'm going to head to London.
Big smoke.
Hope everyone's staying safe, staying well. Enjoy the Europa League and the Conference League tonight. Europe's. Oh, do you know what? I think the Champions League's gone up in the power rankings.
Actually, do you know what?
I think it's gone up in the power rankings.
These semi-finals are definitely showing out.
Champions pilled. Enjoy the rest of the football. Don't forget to check the Stadio Hutchers playlist on Spotify. Speaking of which, we're playing out on the dub mix of Ron Next Door by Ron's Neighbours.
So good.
Anything you would like to add, Musa Okwonga?
Nothing further.
Alright everyone, much love, have a great weekend. We'll be back with you on Monday.
See you then.